Good morning, AC.
Good morning, CJ.
I forgot to do the intro.
Yeah.
Let's start that again.
I screwed up last week.
Okay, hold on. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 223, where today AC and CJ talk to Microsoft's Matt Bremer on the business of Office 365 in Azure, recorded live October 20th, 2017. A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. Good morning again, AC.
Good morning, CJ. You totally should have said CJ and Chris.
Yeah.
As a play from last week.
Making up from last week. Yeah. So for those astute listeners who have or just listened to last week's show, you'll recognize that we said live October 20th. We're actually recording the intros for episode 222 and 223 today, same time. So the live part was probably a little dubious. But anywho, we've got another great interview.
That's still live.
Got another great interview lined up this week that AC did, in fact, with Microsoft's Matt Bremer, good friend of the show and a longtime friend of ours, on the business side of Office 365 in Azure, which is a little different for us, actually. You know, normally we talk about sort of the real techie side of things, and Matt spends a lot of time out in the field with Microsoft, talking to Microsoft customers, and on the business side of Office 365 and Azure. So we've got a great interview lined up for that a little later on. But obviously, we need to have a quick catch-up on what's been going on. What's new with you, my friend?
Oh, not a whole lot, man. I guess it's the last, 5 minutes since we last recorded the previous one. I guess I've been, in the last week, I've been, since Ignite, since I did the release on the Voitano side, I've been trying to find a way to increase my production schedule or at least speed up the assembly line of building chapters. And I think I might have cracked that nut that's been really frustrating me on how long it takes to get one chapter out the door. It's too early to say if it's going to work, but if this does work, this I think will be able to increase my throughput almost 2 to 3x. So I have to see if this is going to something I can really hold true to, but it would be very nice to be able to push more content out to people in a much faster cadence. As of right now, by the time people are listening to this, I've only been able to push one update since I published the course in late September. So
nice. Yeah, I guess, optimizing that and streamlining it, getting more content out quicker would be really helpful.
Yep. How about you? What you been up to?
Awesome. Well, at Ignite, a few weeks ago now, we launched Hyperfish Lite, which is a free offering from Hyperfish on... Oh, are you got a fire alarm?
No, now it's done.
It's getting louder, dude.
Yeah, I know. So right as we were doing the intro for this, my phone buzzed. It was my Nest Protect fire alarms. They all ding me and it's like going, we're about to do a sound check in just a minute. It'll make a little bit of noise. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm in the middle of a podcast.
It should integrate with your calendar and know that you're in the middle of a call. That'd be pretty good.
I'm leaving that notification up so that I can actually ping them and be like, can I hit snooze at some point?
Yeah, nice. Sorry, so back to what I was saying, Hyperfish Lite, we launched a few weeks ago, which is a free offering from us to help you manage and wrangle your photo situation in Office 365 and get them all up to date across your organization. And we've had a bunch of people sign up for it since Ignite. And one in particular made me pucker slightly. And an organization, I won't name them, but that employs 380,000 people.
Holy pucker, man. I'm gonna hear you actually whistle from here.
So they signed up. And as part of that, we go and do the analysis of your Office 365 profile photos, right? And we go figure out. Anyway, needless to say, it took a little while.
Because
slowly grinding our way through 380,000 accounts and checking their photos takes a little time. But hey, it worked. It worked end to end and it completed. And I shouldn't sound so surprised because we've tested it out to about 500,000 before. But it's always... That was in a test environment.
Yeah.
And there's always different when it's in prod, right? When it's in your, when it's a production customer in a production environment, there's always things that are slightly different that you don't account for. But the analysis completed, we generated all the statistics properly, everything worked. And it was just great validation that like that our system scales well and that we're able to cope with customers of that size no problem. And it was just a nice sort of sigh of relief in many ways. You know, I probably shouldn't have been that surprised because we had tested out that far before, but it was always just that like, oh, phew, like that worked well. So yeah, that was something that happened in the last week that I was pretty excited about.
That's awesome. Do you have to notify Microsoft that you're going to be making like that many calls, or do you have to, is there some sort of a threshold or a quota that you got to be careful of to kind of batch things out?
No, we don't have to tell Microsoft, but Microsoft Graph has back off logic in it so that if you start hammering it with enough calls, they'll tell you to, the replies will say, hey, back off for a certain period of time. And so you have to adhere to those. That said, I don't believe we've ever hit that. I'd need to go and look in our logs and go check, but I don't believe we've ever been throttled before. And we take some precautions to try and make sure that we don't, I think we'd overwhelm ourselves before we overwhelm the graph, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have some bottlenecks in our code that sort of slow things down. Like we've got to write data to the database, for example, and that takes some time and things like that. So it's not like we're in a tight loop, just absolutely smashing the graph for hours. That said, we have done tests where we've pummeled it for like 24 hours nonstop. And periodically, I think we've been throttled very, very briefly. But the requests are like, come back in 5 seconds. They're not like, come back in 24 hours. So the throttles are pretty good. And to be frank, Azure Active Directory sees billions and billions and billions of calls a day. And I suspect we're a drop in that bucket. But you know, I'm in communication with the Azure AD team, and I've said to them before, like, would you mind seeing if we're on your naughty list? Because I really don't want to be throttled, like, permanently.
Yeah, yeah.
And can you just see if we're behaving properly? And they're like, oh, yeah, no worries. So that's good.
I've talked to some of the guys on the Graph team about this, on how they deal with this and how they handle that back-off logic. And comparing that too to how the Azure REST API does it, because the ARM REST API has that same kind of back off logic where I think they do it a little bit differently than Graph does it, where you get 15,000 calls you can make in a rolling 24-hour window, but every single call that you make, there's a header value that comes back and says, here's how many you have for the next hour. So you can watch where you're starting to, you know, you can choose to blow all your budget as fast as you can, or you can choose to start kind of spacing it out. But I mean, they give you that kind of insight into it. So I know Graph looked at some different things that they were going to do, and it's an interesting problem to kind of run into, but it's nice that, you know, hey, we provide a service to handle this much stuff. And if you start hammering us too much, we can tell you, hey, back off for a little bit and you can handle it.
It's actually kind of complicated as well, because the logic is not universal across the graph. There's some throttles, you know, at the front end for like stopping denial of service attacks and stuff. But then there are also different throttles depending on which part of the service behind the scenes that you're calling. So like Azure AD have a different method, a different algorithm, I guess, for want of a better word, for how they compute throttles and back off times and stuff, as opposed to, say, OneDrive would. So it's often hard to tell.
And no two requests are the same. And if you're writing a profile picture versus writing, you know, updating somebody's first name, clearly those are two different payloads. So
yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, like profile pic. That goes back to Exchange. It doesn't go to Azure AD, for example. So for a person with a mailbox, at least. And it's kind of hard. It's actually a topic we should really go deep on at some point, because it's super complicated. I'm actually not sure anybody's got the exact answer, but it'd be kind of funny to find out.
The story that you shared with me on updating a profile picture with Microsoft properties, I had no clue that it was anywhere near that complicated. I was like, we just saved the picture. I'm like, holy crap, there's one hell of a decision tree you guys have to go through.
Oh, I wrote out the decision tree on a whiteboard once, and it's multiple levels deep, let's just put it that way. We should talk about it at some point on the show, because I think people get a laugh out of it. Well, laugh or cry, one of the two. But anyway, it's
more complicated
than you might think.
Awesome.
All right, so enough graph news. Let's talk about the actual news. Do you want to kick us off with a news item?
Sure, I absolutely can. So there was something that came out at the beginning or middle of October that was an interesting collaboration between Microsoft and Amazon Web Services. They announced something called the OpenAI Ecosystem with Gluon. I think I pronounced that right.
Yeah.
I have a link to this in the show notes from the Cognitive Toolkit blog. But the idea here is that the two companies have created this thing called Gluon, which is a concise, dynamic, high-level deep learning library or interface for building neural networks. It'll work with both Apache MXNet or Microsoft Cognitive Toolkit, and is supported in all the Azure services tools and infrastructure, as well as on the AWS side. So pretty cool open AI ecosystem that's been set up with a nice little toolkit that you can use on either one of the platforms, which is very interesting.
That is an interesting move. I think it makes sense for them, right? Because they want people to be able to test out both of the platforms with their models and stuff and see who gets them best bang for the buck or who does it faster and stuff. Kind of like the TPS benchmarking of SQL days. But it means it'll be easier to move about, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the part that is probably the most interesting to me is that it's between AWS and Microsoft, and Google's not involved in this. And I don't spend too much time in the AI space or in the ML space, machine learning space or artificial intelligence. But to me, it seems like Microsoft and Google are the ones that are leading the way. AWS seems to have a lot of proprietary stuff that may not be a fair statement to make, but
gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know. I found it interesting. This is great, but it's like, well, where's Google? So
yeah. In other sort of more devy news, Docker had some big announcements this past week, I should say, at DockerCon in Europe. So DockerCon EU 2017 just happened. And one of the biggest announcements, which sort of just blew my mind, was that they are going to support Kubernetes in Docker Enterprise Edition. So for those of you who aren't up to speed with containers and Kubernetes and Swarm and all that sort of stuff, Swarm is Docker's, I guess, orchestration engine, or yeah, I guess for want of a better word. And Kubernetes is an open source orchestration engine platform that came originally from Google. And Docker are now have always built these tools called, well, for a long time, built this tool called Docker Enterprise Edition, which helps customers run swarms of machines in their environment and deploy applications to that swarm of Docker nodes. Now they're making those same Docker Enterprise tools able to connect with and talk with Kubernetes sets of nodes to deploy applications to it. And what's really cool about it is it means that you can have one set of tools and choose either Swarm or Kubernetes to run your application, but you can still get all of the other benefits of Docker Enterprise Edition for things like security and scanning of your containers, scheduling and updating of those applications, RBAC support for different people in your organization getting access in to the tools and doing different operations, all those kinds of pieces of functionality in Docker Enterprise Edition. You don't have to go with Swarm if you don't want. So now they're supporting Kubernetes, so much so that you can run Swarm and Kubernetes side by side as well and deploy apps based on whatever you need.
This is getting really interesting. Interesting in the sense that it's starting, like kind of looking at it more with like squinted eyes, like with a cocked head. I'm like, where is Docker going with this? Where is Docker doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You've had Swarm, which is Docker's clustering model. And then they have Docker Cloud, which is their managed orchestrator, which leverages Swarm. Then you've got Apache Mesos, DCOS, which is another orchestrator. Now you've got Kubernetes. And I think you and I have talked about it. We talked about it a little bit on the live show. I mean, from my point of view, I think that you said as well, I think Kubernetes is winning or is going to win or has won. I don't know how you want to say it, but
it's got a lot of momentum. Yeah.
It's got a tremendous amount of momentum, both in the community, but also in the people that are backing it. It's one of I think I listened to an episode recently of the Google Cloud Platform podcast that was something like they have over 2,000 contributors to Kubernetes, some of them even from big organizations like Red Hat, Microsoft, and Google. So it's just interesting because it's just kind of like, you know, where is Docker going? I mean, I get it from the whole container bit. I get it from the whole, you know, Docker containers. But from the orchestrator, I'm starting to kind of, I mean, I know Hyperfish uses Docker Cloud, but I'm starting to be like, well, Kubernetes seems more like the direction that I'd want to go in. And today, you know, I've got options for hosting a Kubernetes-based cluster and Google on the Google Cloud platform. They have an offering called GKS, the Google Container Engine. You can do things with ACS over in Azure, the Azure Container Service, where you can spin up a Kubernetes cluster. We'd really like to have a Kubernetes managed offering from Azure, but it seems, you know, we're getting to the point where it just feels like Kubernetes is the one you want to go with.
Yeah, it's certainly gaining the most momentum for sure. And I think Docker, reading the tea leaves on this, at least from my perspective, Docker, they're seeing that momentum and they realize that they're not going to make money out of that right? They're not going to make money competing with Kubernetes. Where they're going to make money is from enterprises and all the enterprise tooling around containers. Docker Enterprise Edition is the answer to that. And they're putting all their eggs in Docker Enterprise Edition basket, from my perspective, and saying, look, cool, well, the containers and the runtime stuff, that's never going to make us money. We might get some commercial support for it, whatever, but that's not going to make us all the money. It's going to make us all the money is the tools that go along with it. And to be honest, Docker Enterprise Edition is the most mature tool for commercial customers looking to run production clusters and running production containers. And so they're like, well, if a customer chooses to go the Kubernetes route for running containers, they're all the same containers at the end of the day. You can run a Hello World container in Swarm or Kubernetes. It's the same container. It's just how it gets run. And so they're like, well, cool, let's go sell enterprise grade and production grade tooling to those customers. And so we're going to support Swarm and Kubernetes in those same tools. Makes perfect sense to me. I think Docker are being pushed to make money. You know, they've got a lot invested in them over the years, and those companies want their return, right? They've got to start making money at some point. And so this is their path to profitability, I think.
And it's interesting, that's the big pressure they're facing is how does Docker get to profitability with the different, you know, investments they've had, the different seed funding that they've had. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I mean, even with some other recent news that's come out, you know, they got the KubeCon is coming up, I think at the beginning of December in Austin, Texas. So it'll be interesting to see where all this kind of news, where it all lands and where we're going with it. The good thing is that from the consumer point of view, we're in great shape because there's a hell of a battle going on by all the different vendors and things are getting much better for us. So,
yep, I agree. So yeah, that's Docker supporting Kubernetes in their Docker Enterprise Edition. One other piece of news before we sort of wrap up on, get into our interview, and then we'll finish up with some picks a little later on, is there's a new productivity app. It's that time of the year, and somebody thinks they can do a word processor and a spreadsheet better than everybody else.
Oh, sweet.
But this one is really interesting. It's called Coda. So coda.io, coda.io. And what's interesting about this is the background of who's working on this. I think it's a couple of ex-Googlers, I believe, who are doing this. But they've basically come up with this new paradigm for doing spreadsheets and docs all in one spot. And it's actually a pretty novel take that's a little different than everybody else. So basically this came down from they were running their business or doing a lot of the work to run their applications using Google Docs and Sheets. And they were like, surely there's got to be a better way. And so they've created this new thing called coda.io. I think it's in preview right now. You can request an invite. There's some big companies using it already, like Uber is already using it, things like that. And so they basically try to take a fresh take on spreadsheets and docs. And it's kind of an interesting take because it's kind of like they're all mashed together. So there's no real concept of a sheet versus a doc. You've just got a doc and you can put tabular data in a doc and they've got a sort of a friendlier way of doing formulas and all that sort of stuff. It's really interesting. They've raised $60 million already to do this. And so people are sitting up and taking notice. Who knows? I suspect they'll get bought by somebody and integrated, probably Salesforce or something along those lines. But anyway, worth checking out. It's a tough sell because people are entrenched in the way they use spreadsheets and use docs, use Word docs and things like that. And trying to get somebody to shift tools in the space is pretty hard.
You ever seen someone try and reinvent email?
Yeah, how many times have we tried to see that?
This is quite interesting. The animated graphics look cool. The document looks cool. I mean, it's something that I would definitely use. But again, like you said, am I going to move all my stuff to it? I don't know. I mean, I'm curious.
I mean, it would have to be pretty phenomenal. But I could just imagine, like, take the average user, right? They're going to go in here and try to do something the same way as they did with Excel and be like, what the hell? I have no idea how to do like a pivot table that I used to do. And then they'll give up on it.
Some of the things are interesting. I mean, it feels very wiki, like Office/wiki. Some of the descriptions of it says, think Minecraft for docs. Like, I don't know.
What? Yeah. Sorry, the guys, the two folks that started it worked at YouTube. So part of Google. Yeah.
That's cool.
And yeah, but definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, these kinds of things, new reinventing productivity kind of things come around every once in a while. Usually they go nowhere, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
They got some big names behind it. Reid Hoffman is on their board as well.
Oh, the Netflix guy.
Yeah.
That's cool. We'll have to see how it goes.
Yes. Anyway, so this week we have, like I said at the beginning of the show, we've got a great interview with Microsoft's Matt Bremer. You sat down with while you're at Ignite, right? And talk to him about the business of Office 365 in Azure. How do you think it went, and what did you find most interesting about it?
I thought it was great. It was a very interesting conversation. So the idea here was, you know, we always talk about more of the technical, like in features and releases and stuff like that. But I wanted to talk to Matt, who's got a different perspective. He's in the St. Louis area, and he's got a lot of big customers. And his job is really to, I guess you can say, it's kind of to sell Office 365, to sell Azure, and to sell some of the services that Microsoft has to offer. But it's more or less kind of really working with those customers and showing them how things are better. Like, why would you want to trust Microsoft with moving your Active Directory investment over to Azure AD? Why would you want to move things into Azure in the cloud? Why are things more secure there? In the conversations I've had with them, it's much more around the business of moving businesses to the cloud and the business discussion that you have. And so talking to him, why are people doing it? Is it a cost thing? Is it a being able to, something else you don't have to maintain, something on the security side? That was a different kind of a discussion that we had. I mean, Matt's a good friend of both of ours, but I thought it'd be a really good and interesting conversation. And I got a lot out of it. And I think our listeners will get a lot out of it as well.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, one quick correction before we move on. Reid Hoffman was not the guy from Netflix. That's Reed Hastings.
Oh.
Reid Hoffman was the co-founder of LinkedIn.
That's right. My bad.
Isn't that interesting, though? Because now, doesn't he work at Microsoft?
It is. That is interesting.
So he's on the board of a new productivity app who also works at Microsoft.
That looks very founded in Google Docs.
Yeah. So that's like a little bit of a conflict of interest, you would say. Or maybe they will get bored. We'll see. Anyway, back to our interview.
There we go.
All right, AC. Thanks for sitting down with Matt. I couldn't make that interview at Ignite, so obviously really happy that you got to sit down with him.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that we got to do the interview. I'm really happy that we were able to do this topic. This is one I've wanted to do for a while, so I thought it'd be something different. And hey, to all of our listeners, let us know what you thought about it. Let us know what you thought about the discussion, and if this was, I know our audience is more on the technical side, so I thought that, you know, it'd be something fresh for everybody. So
yeah, for sure. Something a bit different.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, thank you indeed.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
All right, this is AC again. I'm sitting here with Matt Bremer for a different kind of an interview than what you may have heard from us in the past. But first, Matt, thanks a lot for sitting down with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So if you would just take a minute and introduce yourself to our audience so that they know who's on the other end of the mic and they know who's talking to them today.
Right. So I'm Matt Bremer. I am a recovering developer, so I guess I can
kind
of be on the show. Yeah. And my current role at Microsoft is I am an account technology strategist. But essentially, what you can think of me of as is the technical conscience of the technical sales team. And I'm responsible for the entire Microsoft stack. So I interact a lot with C-levels on their strategy, their strategic initiatives, try to fit Microsoft solutions on there, but also help them with where they have investments work with Microsoft solutions. So it's not just necessary. So it's full breadth.
Gotcha. Okay. What do we want to do today? I mean, most of the time we sit down and we do interviews with people or the stuff that CJ and I talk about
it generally falls in the realm of, I'd say, like a technical discussion. Usually it's a little bit more on the developer side, but also on the IT pro side. But we wanted to, as our listeners may be picking up already, this one's going to be a little bit different. We're not going to talk so much on the tech side. We want to talk more about the business of Office 365 and Azure. So I know that a lot of our audience is probably not at the C-level type that's listening to the show, and they're not the type that are maybe the decision makers that are actually at the corporations that are making these big decisions on, you know, should I go Office 365? Should I go Azure? What does that do? But I thought that it would be helpful for our audience to kind of hear what these people are hearing in the background. And sorry for some of the background noise here. We're at Ignite. We have a bunch of press rooms and stuff where we can all kind of meet and stuff. And sometimes you get a lot of interviews going on at the same time and stuff in the background. So a little bit of background noise, but hopefully, you know, weed out those and just listen to the two important people right now, right?
Absolutely.
So what are you seeing? In your role, you know, you're out in the field and you're talking to a lot of corporations about moving over to Office 365 or moving over to Azure and stuff. What are you seeing? What's the message that you're kind of going to them with? And what are they looking for when they actually are starting these discussions, starting these things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a conversation I have often. So let's, for those of you playing buzzword bingo and or the buzzword drinking game, let's start with digital transformation. That's the one everybody's talking about right now. But the reason that that's such a hot topic now is most senior execs in a business, you're talking to your CEOs, your COOs, your strategic leaders within a business, they don't feel that the CIO necessarily plays a key role in innovation, in finding innovation and things like that. That surprised me, actually, when I saw this study that did that, because you think the person in charge of tech is probably in charge of all the innovation. But the senior leaders don't see it that way. They really treat their IT mostly as a cost center, to where they service and maintain legacy systems and integrate those systems. And so most savvy digital leaders or information leaders, CIOs, things like that, are realizing that if they're going to have an impact in this kind of new digital business world, they're going to have to be leading more of the innovation charge, essentially, and or the disruption charge, you know, finding new ways for the company to kind of get to market faster, get new ideas out there, get new ideas to market, things like that. And so what you're seeing is IT leaders have realized a lot of their budget was going towards maintaining and integrating and legacy systems. And therefore, they didn't have the budget to look at those strategic things. And so that's why the cloud economics come into play here. And that's why public cloud, and everyone's got a cloud strategy, right? Everybody's doing that. Everybody wants SaaS. Everybody wants PaaS.
Or at least everybody's talking about it.
They are.
We have to have a cloud strategy.
A lot of them don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
That's why it's top of mind. And so let's take Office 365 for an example. If I'm an IT leader, email to me is a commodity. It's an important aspect, but it's a commodity. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really concern me if it's in my data center. And frankly, I have to have all the people to maintain that environment. I have to refresh the hardware. I have to do upgrades every few years. I have to enable mobility, I got to do things from my security posture that probably challenge my perimeter mentality that I'm not ready for, because I'm probably not fully on an identity plane with my security posture yet and things like that. And so just by simply choosing to adopt a service like Office 365, there's a lot of value there in soft and hard costs. Even though it's perceived to maybe cost a little more upfront for IT in the beginning, right? Because they're like, oh, well, their licenses cost, you know, whatever the premium is. But you're shifting a lot of that over to, you know, in this case, Microsoft, to run those environments with Office 365. You're consuming the service, but now you don't have to worry about upgrades. You're not performing those. So those people that were necessarily focused on those things, maybe they can go and become business analysts and start looking for some of those innovation opportunities. And same thing goes with public cloud. Data center modernization is a big one that you see people think, well, it's just lift and shift, right? People sometimes think of a cloud as, I'm just going to take my VMs, and I'm going to put them somewhere else in somebody else's cloud, you know, server. But it's more than that. Especially, from a developer point of view, if I start leveraging things like PaaS and, you know, some of the plumbing thing, or really start leveraging containerization and things like that, my DevOps are reduced quite a bit. And I can deliver apps faster, and I can deliver them in new modalities like mobile and things like that that maybe necessarily a customer didn't have the infrastructure to do before. I can burst scale for that. I don't have to wait 6 months for procurement to get, you know, all the hardware I need, or some kind of refresh cycle or a certified server build or something like that. And if there's a new feature like in Server 2016 that I want to leverage, or if there's a new feature of some kind of Linux implementation or something like that, I can go to the cloud and I can provision that. I don't need to.
You don't have to wait for the. You don't have to upgrade it yourself and deal with that
right.
stuff. You can take advantage. You can at least test it a lot easier without having to stand up a test bed and have a bunch of experts that know how to do it.
Prove it out quick.
Yeah, you can prove it out quick, and you don't have the overhead of, oh, now we have to run through the upgrade. It's like, no, that's not my job. That's somebody else's job now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And most importantly, I can fail quick.
Mm.
So you almost get, and there's the other buzzword, you know, it's that whole, I'm drawing a blank, I'm a bad Microsoft employee right now. the growth mindset.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
The growth mindset. And yes, it's kind of a buzzword, but I actually embrace it quite a bit. And the shift in our culture has been, take that chance, fail, but fail quick. And so let's empower our developers in particular, go embrace those new technologies that you're seeing. Stand up the platform, just like you said, dev test, right? I don't have to wait for anybody to do that. I've got my space, my sandbox. I go, I stand it up, I prove it out. Then we're on to something.
Yeah.
And then we can start scaling it appropriately for, you know, a production environment or something like that. Or we can find new disruptive ways and try something at a minimal cost. We don't have hardware costs. We don't have people costs. We're trying something. We're throwing it out there. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't have control over these things, but the old IT mentality of governance and control doesn't work in this world.
Right.
You can't be a bottleneck. You have to align with business where the business leaders are influencing IT into what they're providing, almost like a service catalog and things like that. And so that's the shift and that's what I'm seeing across the board. And the customers that get it are doing the transformation. You do see see it gain traction, and you do see them kind of really starting to do some innovative things. So it's an interesting time. It's not just everybody likes to equate it all to buzzwords, and we have our messaging that's out there and things like that, but it's real. It's top of mind, and there's real impact to an organization once they do this.
Are you seeing, going back to your point about, you know, the people that are being kind of a bottleneck, or the companies are where IT is a bit of a bottleneck in the way that like the government regulations and stuff like mm-hmm. that can be, we're not too far removed from how all companies kind of looked at it, unless the very small ones were having a hard time stomaching moving so much of their stuff to the cloud and saying, well, let's take advantage of this. What do you think is like the big thing that's kind of pushed them to say, why should we even really care about the cloud? I mean, it's been an evolution over the last 3 years or so.
Yeah.
It is very different today than what it was 3 years ago. What do you think that is that's really opening that door, or at least opening their mind and making it more palatable to them?
My anecdotal experience is cloud economics in and of itself are what's forcing it, and here's why. Now a dev team can go take a credit card. They'll spin up an AWS environment, spin up an Azure environment. They're going to start doing something. Business is going to use that. They may not involve IT.
It's like shadow IT.
Shadow IT, very much so. Same thing with like Dropbox, and like people were using Dropbox, right? And all of a sudden organizations were like, well, we don't allow files to go outside of our perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do.
And you may not allow it, but it happens.
And they're on all these devices you don't control. So it gets back to that control and governance, you know, idea of IT. And so I think what's happened is, the realization of shadow IT, you know, and the propagation of that, and the accessibility that these people have to go spin something up. I mean, I have a lot of stories of enterprise customers that, you know, they'll go and buy a subscription to something on a credit card and start using it. They'll sometimes have their own Office 365 subscriptions, and they'll have provisioned actually the tenant name already. And then when the company goes to evaluate it, they're like, why is this tenant name already here? Oh, you already have 100 users in this department using Office 365. You didn't even know about it because they wanted to use, you know, some of the collaborative features or the mobile features and things like that. And
yeah.
So I think it's forcing them to be more proactive and aligned with the business to kind of deliver those things. And because you can go around IT now.
Yeah.
You can get pretty far.
So would you say then, I guess, let me kind of paraphrase what you're just saying and tell me if I'm right here. It sounds like what you're saying is that at the beginning, it may not have been, it was as palatable or it wasn't as interesting for people to go through and move to the cloud. I understand what the value was, but when you say things like, oh, it's on the Azure side, oh, it's storage, oh, it's VMs, oh, it's websites. On the Office 365 side, it's like, oh, you have mail. Oh, you have like limited SharePoint. Oh, you have this. Now you're seeing a lot more stuff that is only available in the cloud. And then they want to take advantage of that. Search, the best stuff that happens with search is all going to be up in the cloud. The scale and the fault tolerance and the redundancy and the security that we get inside of Azure and in Office 365, you don't get that on-prem. You only get that in the cloud. So a lot of people, a lot of these companies are looking and saying, we don't have to wait for IT. We can go build, stand this up ourselves because we want those features now. Very much in the same way that the iPhone got into corporations, right? Everybody wanted to say, no, we want to control BlackBerries and Windows phones.
Until the CEO showed up with an iPhone.
Until the CEO showed up with an iPhone and all the employees were just like going, why can't I use my phone to do my work in there. And I'll bring myself. I'm not going to ask you to pay for it. I want to use this.
Right.
Yeah. You think that that's a big piece of it?
I do. But you hit on an important point of a lot of these things are only available in the cloud, some of this technology. And sometimes I think people will misconstrue that as of, like, we being the royal we, Microsoft, we are limiting the on-prem functions to force you to go to the cloud. The fact is there are some things that just are only possible in the cloud, especially if you expand beyond your perimeter. And so now, I mean, remember how hard it was to, like, externally collaborate way back in the old days and how you would share things and whatnot? Now it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
And you can do it securely. And same thing with an app. Think of what you would have had to do to, like, stand up an app and make it publicly accessible or externally available in a secure manner. Now you have that infrastructure available to just do that securely in the cloud. And so I think some of it's an enabling function as well. And then you're also seeing things like concerns like GDPR. And there's tools now available in the cloud that make managing that a lot more effective.
And you see companies too, I think, that are starting to have more of the realization. When we have, it seems, you know, the big buzzword thing in the last few years, or the big news thing in the last few years, is always who got hacked. Who had a bunch of credit cards stolen? Who had a bunch of identity information stolen? You got stuff with, you know, Equifax and some of those guys. But you have companies that say, you know, oh no, we're going to do everything to stay inside of our firewall. We don't let anybody on the outside. And it's like, you don't get it that they're already, people are already working outside. It's more, how do you give them the most secure way of doing that? How do you give them the safest way of doing that? And just accepting that, hey, this is the way it's going to be. It is going to be, you are going to be getting those people that are using stuff outside of your environment.
Absolutely. It's better to help, like you said it perfectly, help them do that securely and effectively rather than just say no.
Yeah.
Or give them, and what you'll, the thing is business will always find a way.
Yeah.
I mean, look at how many businesses are still around on Excel macros and Access database.
Yep.
Because they didn't have the tools available to them. Mm-hmm. And that's why people started using Dropbox. And I think another sentiment that drives a lot of this is now people have very high-end computing at home. They have very high-end app experiences and things like that. When they go to work, sometimes their PC's older than what's at home, and their apps are dated and not like they use when they're at home. You know, people have that sort of seamless cloud experience, even if you're using like the Google apps, or if you're using, you know, Dropbox, Box, those things, you use Facebook or Google Photos and things like that. You just expect that kind of seamless integration between all your apps, or like on your phone, right? Like everything just kind of works. And then they get to work and it's this kind of siloed, dated, you know, experience. And it's hard to move things around and integrate. There are some customers out there who do it really well, but by and large, that's the experience. And so I think people want that experience. And so they go and they start using these consumer tools to get that experience because it's so easy for them to do that stuff at home. And they want the same kind of frictionless environment at work.
What do you see is like one of the biggest challenges, though, that people are having today and still being able to make that jump to the cloud? Like, what's keeping some companies from saying, you know, I don't want to go to Office 365. I don't want to go to SharePoint. Yeah. Or I don't want to go to Azure. What is that reason that they're actually saying, I don't want to do it? Either I can't or I don't want to.
Well, regulation obviously is one aspect of that, depending on the industry, right? Even though I think we've come pretty far on that. We can really maintain regulations in most cloud environments now. It's even probably better than they do on-prem, frankly. The other one is culture. The other one is sometimes, and the more common one I see is technical debt.
Okay.
If you're going to go to cloud with a lot of this stuff, you are opening up your perimeter now. And a lot of companies are doing security at that network layer. And that perimeter mentality and opening it up introduces all these use cases they never had to deal with before, which creates gaps. So now they have to have solutions for that. And they still want to treat the cloud like a perimeter. And it breaks down. It does not work. And that's why you'll see people like still wanting to use proxies and other, you know, SaaS apps start having issues and things like that. It's like, no, they expect you to be coming from the internet and things like that. Or they want to decrypt the traffic between it so they can actually do, you know, like a man in the middle and inspect it. It's like you have to achieve that visibility in other ways. You have to shift your operational mindset. So that's where the culture aspect comes in. You do have to shift your operational mindset when you go to the cloud. Versus on-prem. Maybe they don't have the resources that are able to make that shift. I also think it takes a really firm commitment from leadership to say, you're not eliminating your job by moving this to the cloud. Here's how you're going to add value. Your job's going to get better. You are not going to be focused on patching servers or updating platforms or upgrading or anything like that. Now you're going to be going and helping our business solve problems with these tools.
Right.
And that's the shift that I think if you can help your staff make, because I think some people just are generally scared. If they're the person that's really good at patching servers, well, they're going to be really kind of, they're not going to like PaaS a whole lot. If they're the Exchange admin and it goes up to Office 365, they're going to be afraid of that a little bit. And so they just need to kind of, you need that leadership commitment to show that how you can now have more impact in the business and take that as an opportunity rather than it's a cost-cutting maneuver because I want to eliminate a position or something like that.
Do you see companies doing that? I mean, kind of building off that, do you see them when they do move to the cloud? I've talked to some people that say, you know, their concern is moving to the cloud, that then all of a sudden now that their job has gone away, do you see companies, that's their motivation? Is it to be able to cut costs in the sense to be able to free up those resources they pay for individuals? Or is it that I want to get out of the responsibility, or I want to get out of the spending the money on the maintenance and the patching and all the hosting and all that kind of stuff. And instead, I like to spend that money on innovating and actually moving forward.
I do think cost reduction is a motivating factor always, right? Everyone's responsible to Wall Street if you're a publicly held company and you have those expectations to meet. So there's always going to be that pressure. And that's a reality. But at the same time, I think, again, it comes from a culture and it comes from a leadership perspective of, let's not make this about, yes, we're going to reduce costs, but we're also going to add value in addition to replacing those costs by maybe retooling some of those staff to be able to help, you know, enable these tools, help users do things, become more aligned with the business to do that. You actually see businesses now aligning their business units with divisions in IT and sort of that you know, they're verticalized and they're very tightly aligned. Now, that's not a very common model, but you do see that. And so it's sort of forcing that interaction now. You talk to a lot of IT people who never talk to people in the business. You know, they don't necessarily know how their company makes money or and that's not a good place to be. And so get out of your comfort zone. But fully transparent, there are some cultures and some workforces where that shift is hard and they're not able to do it. And I think in that case, then yeah, they have to be left behind.
That's interesting. It's an interesting time. It's interesting to see, like, to watch companies kind of going through that transition. And I, you know, over the last few years of watching them trying to get to that point, either coming to these conferences and seeing Microsoft pushing the cloud and seeing other events and stuff and the tech media pushing the cloud, because that's kind of where the news thing is. That's a fun thing to talk about. And then seeing some companies like, don't know if it's for me. And then it's, in the last year, maybe a year and a half, you've seen that kind of, that's really changed a lot. I mean, especially, yes. Of course, I'm closer on the Microsoft side. So I see what Microsoft has to offer a little bit more than what the competitors do in that space. I mean, I look at like some of the stuff that like, we'll say GCP or what AWS has to offer, but not so much the productivity type stuff, like a Salesforce or somebody
right.
like that.
Right.
But it sure seems like over the last few years, there's more and more stuff like what you alluded to that simply can't be done in the cloud. I mean, you look at, when I first started hearing things about AI and within the machine learning,
yep.
You immediately start thinking about like hardcore crunching of numbers, and this is like for the high-end workloads, and this is for the real, really specialized stuff that doesn't really apply to what I'm doing. But then you see some of the stuff like what they showed in the keynote the other day mm-hmm. at Ignite, and it's more, this is how they use it for like help desk stuff, and it's freed up, you know, 70% of the help desk
right.
using bots and using AI to be able to help, you know, and help them automatically at HP instead of them having to spend time to do that, freeing up those resources to focus on other things. And so I think that, you know, it's companies being able to see that, hey, so much of this stuff, you can't really do the AI stuff on-prem. I mean, technically you could, but you really can't.
It would take a lot of resource.
Yeah, it takes a lot of resource, a lot of compute, a lot of power, a lot of scalability there. And that's something that a public cloud has to offer, like Azure. Right. So, that, I mean, it's a big piece. The same thing, like, you know, on the side of the innovations that we're seeing on the SharePoint side, right? Over on Office 365, on Microsoft pours, you know, so many new innovations inside of SharePoint. We're seeing those announced at Ignite. But and a lot of those things will eventually come down to on-prem, but no time soon. But
right.
I mean, when they finally do get on-prem, you also know that these things are tight. These things are reliable
right.
because millions of people have been using them a significant amount.
And I think the biggest shift, too, is from the vendors themselves. Microsoft used to be a product company, and a product was something you shipped. And, you know, if a customer purchased it and it wasn't used, it wasn't really, I mean, we cared, but it wasn't as impactful as it is with the services. And a service is something you live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing that's really helped too is we use a lot of these technologies to manage our services. So I think it's elevated the quality, like you said. If we can't build things to be scalable or, you know, easily configurable in a secure way, in an effective way, that affects how the services are run too. And so it's changed the engineering paradigm as well.
Yeah, I mean, and seeing the fact that you guys, I mean, building on that, seeing that you guys dog food your own stuff, and not so much, when I say dog food, I don't mean the kind of dog food that we think of as developers, which is I'm trying out the beta stuff. It's more that you guys are the ones, you're using Office 365 as your corporate, like, intranet and stuff. You don't have an internal, you don't
we're
have an internal farm
just like
anymore.
Everybody else. We're a multi-tenant customer. Everybody thinks we're in this own, in our own cloud, and we're not.
No, you've got your, I mean, you've got a tenant or multiple tenants. Yep. You've got, it's both an Azure and an AWS, and an Office 365. And it's, you know, knowing that, it gives me confidence. It gives me a lot of confidence in it, especially when you look over the Azure AD guys and you see that, you know, hey, Azure AD, is this secure enough for my environment? It's like, it's secure enough for Microsoft. Right. I don't really need to worry too much more about that stuff. Like, yeah, I could check some more boxes off, but it's secure enough for them. It's okay for me.
Right? At the scale it's running.
At the scale it's running, yeah. And I mean, you can't think of a more complex environment than what you guys have. Right. You know, multiple locations all over the world. Most people, like, you know, a lot of people don't work out of an office. You work on your office is sitting here on the desk with you, right?
Yeah.
And but it's got to be secure, and you've got, you know, tons of customer information on there, and I don't know. I'm assuming you have tons of customer information on the different, you know, customers that you end up working with, and a lot of Microsoft information on there. It's got to be secure, but you also got to be able to make sure that everything's reliable up on the cloud and you can get back up and running really fast. It's seeing that kind of stuff, seeing that kind of dog food, that makes a big difference, I think, in customers' eyes.
And the identity plane in one is a great example of put yourself in a technical decision or a business decision maker's shoes. Why would I write my own identity form? If not AADP, we hope you use AADP, but yeah, there are plenty of other great options out there that have engineering resources behind it that you'll never be able to get to. And so that's an example. Go consume that from a cloud service, because now you have an authentication platform that'll go beyond your perimeter. It'll open you up. You can, you know, do B2B, do B2C. You can do all kinds of things that you weren't able to do before, and you're not having to maintain that. It's just going to work. You're going to consume it.
It adds no value to your business.
Right.
Hosting an Exchange server adds no value to your business.
Right.
Hosting a SharePoint server adds no value to your business. Well, okay, that one may be a little bit more on the fuzzy side, but for the most part,
right,
I think that it depends on the vertical you're in and all that kind of stuff. That one doesn't add a whole lot to you. Identity. I mean, identity is, look, boil it down. Identity is simple, right? It's authentication. There's a couple of pieces to it, but it's mainly authentication.
Yeah.
I don't need to maintain that.
And it's fundamental.
It's fundamental. That's a better way to say it. It's a core service.
Yeah.
Or what do you guys call it? You call it ring one or ring
yeah,
zero?
Yeah.
Where it's like when you stand up a new region, that's like, these are the things that are in every single thing.
Yeah, and that's a great example. But the one thing too, I want to, you know, we've been talking cloud. I think one advantage that we have as Microsoft with our platforms is we do understand on-prem enterprise. So that hybrid story is real. I know a lot of people, again, discount it to marketing, and some of it obviously, you know, there's some fluff there, but
it's marketing.
It is real. And you see it with like Azure Stack. You see it with a lot of the hybrid workloads we're doing with things in the modern workplace with like SharePoint hybrid. You know, you mentioned search and things like that. So if you do have those components that aren't a good fit to go to cloud, don't move them to the cloud. We've got solutions for that, and we're the only ones that do that.
Yeah.
And so you got to figure it out, because you're going to have a different opportunity and you're going to have different constraints per industry and also per your business. So you got to find what's right for you. But if you aren't focused on innovation and you are still focused on, I'm going to deliver this as cheaply and as cost effective and cost neutral as possible, those aren't the CIOs or the IT departments that are, in my opinion, going to be impactful for very much longer.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think you're seeing a lot of the shift. And you kind of mentioned another thing, a trend of, you're hearing people more open to it. So I would say probably about 5 years ago is like, oh, that'll never work for me. That won't work for me. Now it's like everyone knows it'll work. So then it's like, okay, well, I have this, and this reason to kind of not do that. Okay, well, we're getting through a lot of that with some of the attestations for security and the certifications and things like that. I think everyone pretty much acknowledges with our attestations and whatnot, you can actually be more compliant in a cloud. And furthermore, you're now not, there's elements of that you're not managing anymore. So you can even, you know, take that off your plate a little bit. And so now you got people, they're starting to kick the tires. They're starting to kind of, you know, okay, well, how can we embrace this? Or what does cloud mean to us? And so there is a definite shift in there, and it's a maturity model. And who knows what the next 5 years will bring, right? Didn't we introduce Skynet during the keynote the other day? So when that gains sentience, we'll all have new robot overlords.
seeing that really expensive, super cold coffee maker,
right.
Fancy coffee maker at the very end.
Or the kegerator. Right?
Yeah, the keg. Yeah, that one's going to be, that's going to be a fun one to play. I mean, CJ and I talked a little bit on the live show that we did at Ignite where it's funny that whole quantum computing thing at the very end, it's over my head.
Mine too. I understood Schrodinger's cat.
I got that part. Yeah. I got that part, but I don't really understand, where it's applicable, like where we can use it yet. But it's also one of those things, so much with so much different technology things, when you go to start exploring something, you're starting to learn something, you're not really sure what kind of impact this is going to have. But you see that, this is so much faster than what we have right now. Mm-hmm. Then there's somebody else out there that's thinking, God, if I only had a machine that was so much faster than what we have right now, we could do blah, 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 blah.
And that use less power.
And yeah.
I mean, when you look at the data centers, just the technology in our Gen 5 data centers that we have for Azure today, I don't know if you ever get a chance to go on a tour,
I would highly encourage
people to do it. But the thought that goes into how far away they are from power stations and how efficient they are, because all of those things matter to our bottom line and then the prices that we're able to set for customers. So reducing those things, and they've done experiments where they're putting, data centers using wave technology in the ocean, and get the cooling and things like that. So yeah, you're right. Those kind of advances are going to take this to another level. And that's why it's important. I just don't know how far away that is, but so
it's cool stuff.
Yeah,
cool stuff. Well, hey Matt, thank you very much for sitting on me and talking about this today. I think it's something that I think that our listeners are going to be interested in hearing in terms of like the business side of what the business side of actually moving to the cloud. So, thanks a lot for taking the time out of your busy day here at Ignite to talk about this stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
Picks. Have you got any picks for us this week?
I have one pick, and this one I thought I couldn't put this article down. Bitcoin. So there's an article on a site called longreads.com, which is actually pretty appropriate. It's a long article that came out at the beginning of October. And the title of the article is "The Creator of Bitcoin Comes Clean Only to Disappear Again." And the idea, what they did is, if you remember, in the very short story is that the Bitcoin was invented by a persona called Satoshi. Nobody knew who Satoshi was. They thought they had found him. It looks like they have found him. And it's this guy in Australia. But then there was a discussion where there was a release or some sort of press release that said that, this is who we think it is. And there was a lot of stuff all right around what happened. And this article goes into depth on what this story was about, how he was going to come clean. He was going to tell his entire story. Then the Australian tax office tried to grab him. It was his little escape thing from Australia over to Auckland. And then from Auckland over to the Philippines or to Singapore. And then he was trying to get from Singapore over to London. It was just watching the story of how this all happened behind the scenes. I found it really, really fascinating. And it's something that I think that the guy's working on a book, or he's working on a whole series for it. So this is just an excerpt, and I can't wait to dig into this. This is the whole idea of cryptocurrency and why it's great, why governments are scared of it, and why it's confusing.
Wow.
I think it's fascinating.
That's really cool. I would definitely want to read that.
Yeah, it was a cool little find. How about you?
Very cool. Hey, well, two stars colliding is pretty kind of big. So
literally.
NASA in the last couple of weeks, I think October 16th-ish, something like that, announced that scientists for the first time had detected light tied to a gravitational wave event thanks to two merging neutron stars in galaxy NGC 4993, located about 130 million light years away from Earth.
Just make a left.
Yeah, no joke. How cool is that? So we've got a link. It's not a photo to this event, because I don't think they've got that much.
I should say the illustration is very cool. I mean, it's one of those things that'd be really, it'd be cool if we were able to get a picture of this one day. So surf's up, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.